The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. My name is Dustin O'Hara, and I'm here with my brother and co-host Devin.
Hello, we're back.
We're in a midweek recording session because busy weekends, and then I'm going on vacation this upcoming weekend, going to Montreal to visit my wife, who's already up there for the week. We can chat about that a little more, but yeah, so we're recording on a Monday. This will come out on a Tuesday, and then we'll miss the weekend. So welcome everybody hanging out with us. Thanks for listening. Devin, what do you got for us tonight?
Now this is something I want to see how much of this I can send and if it comes through.
Oh, okay.
And see if you can read. Let's see. I'm going to send that.
All you listening suckers get nothing.
I'm going to send this. Well, I want you to read a part of this quote so I can read the other part.
Okay.
Oh, that doesn't really work, does it?
Oh, because I can see the whole thing? I don't know. Oh, you sent it there. Okay. Ooh, man.
That kind of works.
Oh, I was like looking on my phone, but those of you who are listening, we're using a program called Cast, and on Cast you can write notes back and forth, so he sent it in the notes.
Which kind of, but it didn't come up. But anyway, so you're going to play Maggie from this movie.
I'm going to be Maggie. Okay.
Which you kind of know how she does this, right?
Yeah.
Remember?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Let's do it. There we go. Now pay attention, class. We have a lot to go over. Lesson one, why parents hate their children. Anyone?
Doesn't Mommy read to us every night?
You, the cute little urchin in the front row. Won't you share your thoughts with the whole class?
Yes, I said Mommy reads to us every night because she loves us very much.
Loves you? Isn't that the, you douche me.
Oh, the L word, Captain.
yes. No, child, I think your mother reads to you every night in order to stupefy you to sleep, so that she and Daddy can sit down for 3 measly minutes without you and your mindless, inexhaustible, unstoppable, repetitive, and nagging demands. She took my toy. She wants my bear. She wants a potty. I want a cookie. I want me, mine, now. Can't you understand, child? They tell you stories to shut you up.
And conk you out? That's not true, Jack. You're a liar.
Lie me? Never. The truth is far too much fun.
Tried to do Smee and Maggie.
Yeah, hey. And I heard you kind of switch into Smee. You're like,
yeah, right.
Oh, the L word, Captain. I got to work on my Captain Hook. But that is from Hook. Now, I wanted to do that one not because I think I only read to my kids because I want them to shut up. But the great thing about a great movie and a great character is you can have the bad guys have an edge of truth to what they say, which a lot of bad guys do. They have a point, but it's always skewed, right? At the end of the day, he only tells the kids that, which has some truth to it, that they're trying to get you to go to bed. So sometimes they can have some peace at the end of the night. But also there's the truth that they like doing it and they want to do it. And of course they were with you all day and loved, you know, it's like all the things he doesn't say, but it's just such a great scene, and that movie has so much heart. And I didn't realize people kind of poo-poo on it a little bit.
Really?
Who? Maybe not our generation, because we kind of grew up with it.
Yeah.
So it has like such magic, but there's a little bit of, I don't know what, maybe they're like, yeah, Hook's not that great. It's kind of, but I think Hook's one of his best. Oh, yeah. But anyway, so a topic of conversation I was thinking about earlier, and I saw something on YouTube and Instagram talking about when artists get older, why do we think a lot of them lose their touch? You know?
Yeah.
Now, the obvious is, you know, you just, well, not, I don't know if it's obvious, but like you get too comfortable. Your desire isn't there. Your hunger for for success isn't there.
You're working
from a comfortable spot.
Yeah, right, right.
Because
that discomfort breeds like creativity.
Right. You're really pushing for everything to be great and perfect, and and you're taking chances because you have nothing to lose.
Right. I think that's like, that's one of those things where it's also, and the injustice of like becoming a popular figure because people like you for what you became popular for, right? It's the thing that everyone knows you for. So then then when you go beyond that and you're just, it's, you're in your normal progression of, you know, creativity and, you know, how you evolve as an artist in whatever that art is you're doing. Like, then people are like, oh, I like the old, you know, the original da-da-da, the one, you know, this artist or this director or this, you know, like, musician. And like, I like the original. I like when you, you know, from what I like you from, where I originally found you. And, yeah.
Right.
And they want to keep you there. And you're going to progress and change and grow.
Right.
But, then, you know.
The growing isn't necessarily a good thing, necessarily. It's good to you, personally. Obviously.
Right.
But Green Day doesn't necessarily make better albums now than they ever with Dookie and when they were writing stuff from 16 to 25.
Right.
For whatever reason. But so, right, so just, well, what are some Spielberg movies that stand out to you? It's kind of such a broad question, but.
Yeah, Jurassic Park.
I know it's almost so obvious that it's like, it's so many hits.
Yeah, right.
It's like asking what Nirvana songs you like or Beatles songs. You kind of. Yeah.
Is Spielberg's Jaws as well?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if there's Spielberg movies either. I don't know. It's like, there's another tip. Right.
I'm going to hit you with the. Well, I'll give you all the big. Well, they're all big, but. Mm-hmm. So Jaws is the first big hit. Mm-hmm. Then Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Right, yep.
Indiana Jones, E.T.
Oh, yeah.
Another Indiana Jones.
Gangs of New York, is that Spielberg?
No, that's Scorsese.
Scorsese, that's right, okay.
Yeah. Hook.
Yeah.
So these are his back-to-back movies. Hook, Schindler's List, and Jurassic Park.
Oh, jeez.
Maybe the greatest, like, three movies in a row out of anyone ever. Amistad, Saving Private Ryan, A.I., and that's where it starts to fall off. Now, the rest of his movies are good, but they're not. They don't capture the same thing as the
those original bangers.
You know, Jurassic Park, Indiana Jones, Saving Private Ryan. Because then it goes into Catch Me If You Can, which was good, but then Terminal and War of the Worlds and Munich and. Mm-hmm. Like War Horse and Bridge of Spies and, you know, Ready Player One, which is okay. I did like West Side Story, but, you know, that's just a musical.
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of boring. Like, nothing amazing.
Right, yeah.
Like, he's just an old guy making, and some of those movies, someone brought up the point, this isn't mine, I'm stealing it, but anyone could have made, like, Bridge of Spies or War Horse or something. You know, one, like, right. These... There's no, like, flash to them.
Yeah.
In his style. Like, some of them are so simple. And I'm sure he wants those every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, anybody could have made that. You know, to a degree. Like, you could have gave it to any good director and had that script and those actors and come out with something pretty similar, which I don't think you could for... something like Jurassic Park or Close Encounters or Jaws. Yeah. Like, you needed him to do that.
Right.
But yeah, it's just a weird, it's a weird thing when you have some of the greatest artists who just stop creating great art, or maybe stuff that is captures like the imagination of everybody in the same way. And I know now it's kind of different now. I mean, there's just not that many great movies made anymore, right. Or maybe there are, but they just are. It's also watered down with everything that there's not one movie that everyone has to see. You know?
Yeah. Not as much.
It's very strange.
Yeah, I was trying to think of, like, through artists, you know, like, fine artists that I know.
Yeah.
I would say the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd say someone like Matisse. You know, I feel like the later Matisse paintings are just so simple and, like, in my opinion, don't have the same, you know, pizzazz, the early stuff. Or, like, Cézanne, you know, got, like, super cubist in the end. And Picasso, same thing. And... but, like, someone like Monet, though, he actually, like, went the opposite way, where, like, he was painting Impressionist paintings early on that looked like everybody else's, and then he got, like, further and further away, and even, like, pushed into, like, a whole new, like, you know, like, all those really blurry paintings where he's just painting the atmosphere and, like, the feeling of light and color and, like, really pushed it, like... In my opinion, even like all the giant water lily paintings, you know, they're like almost abstract expressionism, but he was like 100 years before that, you know, like really getting into how paint and light and color like react. So he's someone who's like the other way around, where I think, you know, his early work is great, but his later work is what really made him who he is.
Right. And then, I mean, but then, you know, woodworkers and knife makers and stuff, kind of people, you kind of end up. There's certain things that where you're making tools and you're mastering those type of things, I think you just get better and better. And people appreciate it, you know, to the end of your life.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think, like, you know, like you said, music, you know, music, you're, like, pushing an edge, you know, you're, like, trying to make a statement or put something out there that's, like, new and fresh and feels invigorating, and then, like, I think over time, you know, musicians... sometimes lose that edge over time. Yeah. Maybe it's like, I think the majority of musicians do. It's the minority that really stays with it, you know, and can like and have a really long lasting career.
Yeah, maybe it's an energy thing.
Yeah,
like subconsciously or just the what those people are creating, whether it be directors or musicians. You can feel them having fun with it. You know, or being excited by it and having real emotions behind it, instead of just being like a calculated, like, oh, I know how to do this type of thing.
Yeah. I think Buddy Guy is like doing like one more concert tour. Yeah. He's like 99 or maybe not. He's like 91 or 92. It's crazy. My father-in-law thought about going to see. Him, he's like coming back to Charlestown, Charlestown or whatever in West Virginia, and so he was thinking about it. But the tickets are really expensive, and he's seen him a couple times. Actually, Nicole and I and my in-laws went and saw him like 10 years ago or so. But
that's one of those guys. It's speaking of you, maybe that's with artists, older artists, you get. So maybe it's, you know, between being clean and dirty, not in that way, but in being rough, a little rough. We like that. We like the feeling of that over a perfection, maybe.
Right.
You know, I actually had a fun conversation with Dad last year or something.
Yeah.
And he was, like, putting in some album for me. Like, he had it on a CD or something. Might have been, like, Buddy Guy or something. Or no, some... I think it's the blues CD he had.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, that's good. But I was like, don't you think it's too clean? And he was like, what do you mean? What are you talking about? I said, like, it's like perfect. Everything sounds perfect. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like when all these artists got into the 80s and 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And just they had the best of everything. Like, you know, so everything's overproduced. Everything is like, the drum take's done 1,000 times and everything's super clean with the best mics and there's no feeling to it. You know, there was no like, they went into like a surgery theater. mm-hmm. and made like music like this, you know, and came out with a super clean thing. It just doesn't
right. sterile. There's no like humanity to it. No,
right. Yeah. Not like an early Rolling Stones album or something, you know, where you can, it's all rough. It is all right. attitude and like groove, you know, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. but then eventually they clean that up and you're like, I don't know.
Yeah. Right.
Like, I'm not feeling it. Like, it's
where's the reality, you know, like,
right. Yeah. That maybe that's what you're searching for. A little piece of like, John Lennon said, just give me some truth.
And yeah. I think about that in the perspective of a craftsperson, someone who, like, you know, makes things, mm-hmm. Where I'm always striving for a certain level of perfection mm-hmm. in, you know, like the smoothness of a mm-hmm. hand or the mm-hmm. symmetry or like, you know, a clean grind on a knife or, you know, a really straight hang on an axe or, you know, you remove all the tool marks and everything. So like, but there's always some evidence there. Like, it's never perfect. And if it is, like, then it's like, okay, is that, have you like reached a certain goal, or is like, is the goal always to be perfect? But you're like trying to strive. There's always like something that like the maker can point out, you know, like, oh, here's where I, you know, slipped with my file and I scratched this little thing here. And there's so that right. the groove there is a little offline or something, you know?
Yeah. It's like, when someone can make a run of like 100 or 200 things right. and they all look exactly the same and you're impressed that they found a process to recreate this thing right. over and over. But there is a little bit of, maybe it's like we think it's, there's too many hands in the pot or something. You start mm-hmm. going, well, now it's not just the vision of one person, maybe. You know, right. Sometimes if it is knives and stuff. But then you start thinking, oh, they must have had like a team. Right. Or there's no way they could have scaled up or like, You're moving away from some focused vision by a couple people or one person, mm-hmm. and that goes, you know, they've got some company doing this part for them and that part for them and this and that, and
right.
It's like the whole Amish furniture thing, where you go, or I went, and it all looked perfect.
Yeah,
but it looked like I could have gone to like Ashley Furniture and seen the same right. stuff. I was like, oh, so. Like, it's nice, but...
So, yeah, what's the point?
It's probably, you know, just like, Amish guys using the same machines that everyone else uses to make this furniture.
Right.
You know, yeah, and like, all right. I mean, maybe it's better hardwoods and stuff, but, you know, it just right. looks like the computer desks look like something you would see
right
at anywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to see a little bit of hand-builtness to it if I'm going to spend, you know, $4,000 for a computer desk.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I want it to look like it's handmade, mm-hmm. you know, not look like it's made just by a machine, like a, you know, perfection.
Right. People get too good at hiding the seams and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
That it's like, oh, well, now it's just, yeah, it looks like one big chunk of, like, plastic.
Right. Yeah, I was just, so just this past weekend, we went to the Maryland Sheep and Wool Festival, and I was there 2 days with Corinne. We were there with the Njörður's Wanderers, the Viking reenactment group. Mm-hmm. And I made 2 knives before I went. So there's a, like, one was a blade that was probably about like maybe 10 inches long, pretty thin, almost like a big like kitchen knife, you know, almost like a fillet knife, but not exactly. And so I made a handle for it that is hickory, and then I used some copper wire and I wrapped it around the handle right past the ricasso from, like, you know, there's like the blade and then probably about like 3/16 of an inch of wood, and then I did about 3/16 of an inch of wire wrapping. So I used like thin copper wire and wrapped around, so you get this kind of wrapped wire at the top of the handle right before you transition to the blade. And I used a square file to recess the wood slightly, so that way when I wrapped the wire, it would inset into the handle, so it wasn't just like proud, you know, it wasn't sitting on top, so it would kind of fit down in a little bit. And I was like, just by eye, I was trying to make the line parallel between the end of the handle, or the, you know, the handle, the end that transitions to the blade, and the recess, you know, just in my file. And it's like a little bit off on one side, like one side's pretty straight and one side's just a little bit crooked, where it's like it's not perfectly parallel. And I showed Nicole and she was like, she was like, I can barely see it, and I would have never seen it if you didn't like point it out, you know.
Right.
But it's also, there's like an element of reality to that too, that I was okay with. Right. You know, it's like in the moment I was doing it, I was being pretty careful. Like I was trying to do it as perfect as possible. Mm-hmm. And there's a little bit that's off. But that was like within the tolerance of what I was okay with. Mm-hmm. You know, like if I had completely fucked it up, then I would have like redone it, you know, like, or I'd have sanded it down and tried again. But it was like, there's a little bit of that, like it can be a little bit off and still do what I wanted it to do. Mm. And then also in like the authenticity of like a tool that was made by hand, would have had some imperfections in it at any point throughout history, you know? So as like, I was okay with that level of inaccuracy when I was making that handle. That was supposed to be like part of our group's, you know, kitchen chest stuff, you know, like a kitchen knife that you would use to cut up fish and cheese and whatever. So I think like in that moment, you know, I had to decide like how much inaccuracy I was okay with before it went like too far. And then it would reflect on me as a craftsman. Like, okay, now you're not trying, right? You know, it's like...
Yeah, right, right. You know. You still... Right, yeah, but there's a... You want to make some of these things by hands, and you're not using all the fancy jigs and stuff, so you line it up with your eyes best you can, and some things drift and move a hair here and there, mm-hmm. and but you have to just continue with it to finish something.
Yeah,
and keep restarting something, then you will screw the whole thing up.
Right, and I love, you know, I have that poster, that lit poster that Nicole got me from Jimmy Dresta that says, if it looks straight, it is straight. Mm-hmm. And I love that saying because, like, you know, what we see as, like, creators is what we're putting out there, you know? So, like,
yeah,
it doesn't have to be perfectly perfect as long as it looks right. You know, and like, so like when I grind those handles, I'm doing like an kind of oval handle that's a little bit bigger at the end of the handle and then gets narrower toward the blade. So it's like an even kind of taper from one end to the other. That's like the Viking EDC knives or that Viking knife handle style. And so I just do that by eye. I just like kind of estimate in my mind how big I want the end of the handle to be. And then I taper it to where the handle, when it transitions into the blade, where it's pretty close to the width or the height of the blade from edge to spine. Mm-hmm. And then I just do it by eye. I just like hold it to the grinder and I look at it and I keep touching it up until it looks like it's about right, you know? And I think like I could mark it all out perfectly. I could draw a perfect oval and then go up to that line. But there's a level, again, like a level of tolerance or a level of inaccuracy that I'm willing to attempt without having to just be like absolutely precise and mark everything off, or like you said, use templates. Like there's something in the art of doing something by hand that I think is that you lose when you have a perfect process, a perfect set of templates, and a perfect of everything, that like then it's just a process. It's not like,
right,
it's not the creation. There's not as much artistic interpretation in the creation of what you're making.
Yeah, right. If you can do it, leave a little room for slight changes here and there, mm-hmm. just depending on what you're doing and what happened in your hand.
Right. I think that's what people pay for. That's why people buy things that are handmade, is because they want to know that. They want to know the story. They want to know that there's like that, mm-hmm. that person made that thing. Mm-hmm. And so if there's something that's a tiny bit off, that's because it was a real person. Like, you can see the story in it.
Yeah. No, that is such a great Jimmy line, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's his whole thing. Like, it's just saying get it done.
Yeah, right.
It's more important getting it done.
Yeah.
Like, does it feel right to you? And that's what it is. Like, does it? I mean, that could be towards anything. But you're okay with this? You like this?
Yeah,
cool. Then let's move on. We like it. We've decided we like it.
Right.
If someone wants to come along with a measuring tape and start to criticize you on something, you go, okay, like, what do you want? Like, you feel better, or like you win a prize? Like, I don't know what you want, but I like it.
Yeah, and I think about like within the realm of knife making, you know, you have like the American Blades Society, and you can become a journeyman, and you can become a master smith, and so on and so forth. Like, you know, the whole idea of being like a master smith is that like now you have this distinction, and now everything that you make, you can charge a lot more because you have been like, you know, you've hit a mark and people, you know, understand that about you.
Yeah.
But then there's no, like, I don't know, maybe for some bladesmiths there are, but there's like, now you have no like leeway to just play around and like make a mistake in a knife or something, or like,
yeah,
cause you can't sell that knife as a mastered smith because that, you know, you just, it's not the same level of quality that like people are expecting from you, you know? So like, someone like Jonathan Prince that we, I recommended, and like, so did Matt Stagmer, we had him on, you know, he's like the epitome of like a playful artist when it comes to, you know, knife making or any bladesmithing or any metalwork. He's always like trying crazy stuff and like weird shapes and like, you know, there's just like this level of play that he does that makes his work so much more interesting, I think, than other mastersmith blades that I've seen that are like perfect, you know, like everything is perfectly symmetrical and everything's like polished perfectly and every little piece is like done exactly right and no mistakes, and like there's a lack of life there, I think, you know. It's like, yeah, I know, because it's coming from that person, I know that they did it by hand, I know they took their time, they wore their magnifying glasses, they did everything to make it like perfect, and so I know that they're like, in my mind, intellectually, I know, but it doesn't have that same type of life that I would think that I would get some from, you know, someone who was experimenting and tried something crazy and did something fun, or like, you know, like, oh yeah, I ground this whole thing by eye, you know, like might not be perfect, but I did it all by eye. Like, look how close it is, you know, just by eye. Like that would be, you know, I'd be more down for that.
Right. And I don't think saying that takes away from those people who have gotten that and who strive for perfection and continue to put out a, like a, an almost perfect piece every time.
Right. Yeah.
What I would think the point is yes, it kind of shackles yourself to a higher thing, then yes, your play becomes less. All that becomes less because it's like, hey, now you're a pro. Now you're like, now you're special. So like, don't act up anymore. Like, you know, don't try these crazy things because this is what you do. And you're right. Everything needs to, you can't stop it at this point on this thing. Everything has to continue to be like a perfect level.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so cool. So the event was good. Like, at least you did it as the Wanderers.
Yeah, so I was there.
Which that was the first time you've done it that as the Wanderers?
No, we've done Maryland Sheep and Wool. So this is my, I don't know. I think maybe it's my second time doing it. So I think it was 3 years ago that
I dropped you off, didn't I?
At Sheep and Wool, or at, you're talking about
at Sheep and Wool.
Was it Sheep and Wool, or you're thinking about Carroll County Celtic Fest?
No, Sheep and Wool, but I don't think you were. Yeah, I dropped you off in Sheep and Wool.
Okay, maybe like Nicole was already there or something.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right, because I did that video. So yeah, and then I found Nicole because she was there. Yeah, so that 3 years ago was when we had just started talking to the Wanderers about possibly joining. And so we came out to Sheep and Wool with the intent to like go and talk to them and say hi and see them in action and, you know, like, and then feel it out a little bit, you know? And so this is my, like now, you know, we just did this. So it was like two, I guess, full years, you know, with the group after that. But yeah, no, like that's a great event for one. It's like, a lot of the focus of our group is in fiber arts, you know, so we have a lot, you know, a lot of like wool manufacturing and spinning and weaving and, you know, different types of, you know, null binding, which is a type of like knitting type thing. And so we have a lot of people in the group who do those things. And we focus heavily on that craft in the Wanderers. And then we have, you know, we have our, like our woodworker and we have, like cold metal working. And then we have hot metal working like blacksmithing. And then I do bow making and like people will do like wood carving. We have a couple wood carvers and, you know, so on and so forth. So we have some other stuff that goes on as well. But it's a great event for our group because of the fiber focus, you know, the fiber arts focus. And that's what Maryland Sheep and Wool is. It's all about like, you know, fiber arts with wool and so on, that type of thing.
Were you outside this time?
No, we're inside again. So in the the what they call the breed barn. So it has all the different breeds of sheep. And we're on like one end of it and have like this big corner, pretty decent amount of size, which is kind of cool. But I actually like that space, other than the fact that like when we do outdoor events, we can blacksmith, you know, we can have a fire. Like we can't have a fire inside the barn, unfortunately. But yeah, so it was good. So, you know, it's a good event for our group because we're very like fiber arts focused, but it's also like so many people, you know, just like all day long, you know, it's just people like walking through. I mean, there are like 100,000 visitors to Sheep and Wool, you know, every year. And there's, you know, like 300 vendors, you know, it's like, and 250 of them are all yarn manufacturers. Like how many, you know, more skeins of yarn can there be in one place? It's crazy. But, you know, it was, so I was doing bow making during the event and I was using the new yew that I cut down recently, and it's still pretty green. So I've cut it maybe about a month ago or so. So really I was just kind of like, I was shaping down, like kind of getting bark off and looking at the staves underneath to see what would make the best side of a bow, so on and so forth, and kind of just roughing it out. So I was talking to people about that, but it was kind of fun because I had five varieties of wood there that I was using for bow making. So I had yew, which was what I was demonstrating with, because that would have been accurate to the time period, to the Viking Age. You know, we're doing 800 to 1,000 that time period. Mm. In Europe, they would have had yew, and they would have hickory and ash and oak. So I had yew. I had Osage orange, which would not have been, you know, in Europe, but I have there because that's what I make bows out of. I had hickory. I had ash, and then I had cedar. And so it was really cool to be able to like talk about all those different woods and how different they are, and how like each wood is specific to it. Like the way you handle it is different based off of, is it the sapwood you use? Is it the heartwood you use? Is it both you use? You know, is it brittle? Do you have to back it? You know, so it was like just kind of like endless information to talk about the bows, because inevitably one out of every like three people asks like, so how long does it take you to make a bow? You know? And so the easy answer to that is like, it completely depends on what type of wood you're using. You know? So if I was using hickory, where you just take the bark off, you know, it's like, okay, that might take me 4 or 5 hours to make a bow. If I'm using Osage, it might take me 4 hours just to chase a growth ring before, you know, if I'm using yew, which I'm doing now, it's a little bit of both. So it's like, you got to balance it. So you kind of have to go back and forth. And so it was fun. It was, but like, it was just straight, you know, we got there a little late on Saturday. So we got there around probably 10 o'clock and then, you know, straight till like 6 o'clock, just talking to the public, you know, and like demonstrating and teaching. And, you know, our group is fun though, cause it's like, you kind of do a bunch of stuff, you talk to people, and then I might walk around and like, I might grab some food from our, you know, from our food table and talk to some of the other members. And, you know, so it's very, is like, we're representing a little like trading camp, or like a little community of members of craftspeople who all trade internally and stuff. So
it's like,
you know, you don't feel like you have to just stand there and talk the whole time, because it's the reality of our group. It looks like, you know, we want to have this kind of everyday life thing where some people are eating and some people might be going to the bathroom, and, you know, it's like, there's some life to it, which is kind of fun. But, yeah,
for sure.
But, yeah, it was good.
Cool. Yeah. Oh, so say while you were there, so you just went for Saturday and then went back.
Yeah, we were there both days. We were there Saturday and Sunday.
So you just drove it back down there Sunday?
Yeah. So Sheep and Wool is over at the Howard County Fairgrounds. Oh, right, so it's like south of Mount Airy. And yeah, so it's about like 35 minutes from our house in Reisterstown. So we drove over. It was kind of fun. So the gates for the demonstrators close at 8 o'clock in the morning to be able to like have trucks and stuff in on the fairgrounds. And then, you know, it opens up to the public at 8:30. And so we got there later, so we couldn't actually like drive in to drop all the stuff off, you know. And I had like bows and stumps and, you know, my Viking chest and baskets full of stuff. And I had a lot of gear that I needed to bring in. And so our woodworker, Bob, he has this awesome, like, cart that he built. That's like, if you imagine half of a barrel, but the barrel is like 5 feet tall and like 4 feet in diameter, You know, so like a giant barrel, if you imagine like half of that, that's yeah. like, it's like, that's the cart. And then it has two big wheels that are probably like 4 feet tall, made out of wood. And then it has like two, like a big handle coming straight off the front with like a yoke. Like if you were to hook up like a oxen or something, you know, you could do that. Nice. So we actually like, we parked, we walked in, we got the cart and went back out to the car and then loaded it all up with all the gear and all the stuff and then walked it in like through the main gates and like down the main walkway to our thing. So it was like this like event of like another, you know, craftsperson coming to that like trade camp and setting up the trade. So it was really good. And then like throughout the day, I think probably had like 6 or 7 people that were like, oh yeah, we saw you coming down the street. I'm so glad we found where you are. You guys, this is great. You know? So it was like, the spectacle like a new of thing. That was you're fun. Like,
oh, I'll come at 10 every time.
Yeah. Right.
Be singing a little song as you go, come down, come everyone.
Hey, yeah, right. Exactly. Come.
Very,
come
very check Renaissance out festival.
Yeah. That was good. And start we doing magic about that and doing stuff like, with whips and stuff. You know, someone should take the cart out and go walk around and like gather things right, or something right. You know, and come back. It was fun, but we actually got there a little late because, so Saturday morning I dropped off Nicole at the airport. She flew to Montreal. She's there for an art librarian conference. And then, so I had to take her down to Dulles in DC. And so we like drive to Dulles. We get up at, you know, 5:15, leave the house by 5:50 or so, drive down, get to Dulles. It's probably like 7:05 or so. And I drop her off and I turn around and I leave in about like 10 minutes later, maybe 8 minutes later, she calls me and she's like, I'm at the wrong airport.
Mm.
I'm like, no, she was supposed to be at Reagan, which is another DC airport. Mm-hmm. So I like turn around, go back, pick her up, take her over to Reagan. And then, so that's why we're a little bit later to Sheep and Wool. But when you like the, you know, all the airports have like the three number acronym, like BWI mm-hmm. and so on and so forth, JFX, all those things. Well, Nicole's acronym for where she was saying, it was like she's flying out of DCA, you know, so she's mm-hmm. like, okay, DC, right? District of Columbia, whatever, like that's Dulles, or mm-hmm. Dulles, D for Dulles. But DCA is Reagan, and it's like IAD, like International Airport of Dulles, you know, something like that is Dulles. So she like never even like thought about it. It was just like, oh yeah, it's we're going down to DC, that's Dulles, you know, because it's the bigger airport. Reagan's a smaller airport. But fortunately, Reagan is small enough that like they have two terminals. They have one terminal that's like Southwest and another airline, and then Air Canada, which is what Nicole is flying. That's like Terminal A, and then Terminal B is like 8 or 10 more airlines. And so like I dropped her off in front of Terminal A, and there's like no other cars, no other people. So I'm like, all right, bye. And she like walked in, and she like texted me like 20 minutes later and was like, I'm at my gate, I'm fine, you know, like no line, no wait, nothing. So she did get there fine in time, but yeah, so that got us a little bit to the thing. And then Sunday we actually also got there a little bit later just because we knew we were going to stay late to help clean up everything at the end, and we, you know, with our dogs, we don't want to leave them in the crate for too long. So that's why like last night I think I got home at like 7:15 or something, and that's why we didn't record last night. We recorded tonight.
Yes.
No, but it was a good weekend, and you know, it's always fun. Like, I had more people this time because there were a couple times where I'd like walk around the event just to check things out, and I had more people comment on the outfits. You know, like I had several people told me they liked my fit. They're like, oh, I like your fit. I think they just assume that I'm like wearing like woolly, you know, like woolen stuff because it's Sheep and Wool, because there are a lot of people that are wearing like lots of different things, like capes and things, like also right. Everyone's wearing some knitted garment, and it was like, you know, 55 between 55 and 65 all weekend, so it was like perfect for like, you know, like a late spring, you know, or early spring kind of cool weather.
Yeah.
But yeah, there were tons of people that talked about
it. What a delightful frock you have.
I know, right? They're like, that's great.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, there's this weird thing, not with that event, but where now it's like, it's hard to get tickets to certain Renaissance festivals.
Mm. Yeah.
And right. I don't not like that because it's popular, because at least our Renaissance festival has always been popular. The Maryland Renaissance Festival has always been packed when we go, you know, relatively.
Right, yeah.
So that's not an issue, but it's like, it's harder to get tickets now. Like, they sell out so quick because it's almost like a lot of people want to go, like, ironically. And there's a little bit of that for everyone because it's goofy.
Yeah, right.
There's definitely goofy parts, and you have to be ready to, like, be playful and silly and do some pretend. Like, we all know that's what it's about, but, like... Mm. I don't know, maybe now it's like an influencer thing where people go and, like, you know, take photos and, like, it's like, no, come on, you're ruining it. Like, it shouldn't be, like, overrun and impossible to get a ticket to an event. But anyway, that's going off.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy, though, like, how popular it is now. You know, like, I wonder why. Like,
I think why has it grown so popular? I think people want to take pictures and stuff there, and people are just going, like... Yeah. You know, to get pictures of themselves at the things.
Yeah, maybe it's like also that, like go ahead. I was going to say, like, I think it's also just the effects of social media. That, yeah, like, more people know about it now, right? And, like, more people see this stuff. And, like, you know, the whole Jacques Z. Whipper dude, like, apparently is, like, has a big following on Instagram or something.
Oh, yeah. So you get one of those things go viral.
Yeah. And then people are like, oh, that's in Maryland? Yeah.
10 million people see it, and then...
Right.
50,000 extra people want to go the next 2 weekends.
Exactly.
And you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, right, exactly, yeah. And just because, you know, everything is much more, like, out in the world now because, you know, of all this free advertisement.
Right.
Where, like, when we were in high school and we would go and we would, like, you know, you could go on any weekend and just walk up and buy a ticket at the gate, you know, and go in. And it would still be packed inside, but it wasn't, like, they weren't sold out, you know, like that. They weren't, like, limiting the amount of people, but it's always been packed. But
yeah, it's very strange.
Yeah.
So yeah, on Saturday I had the rest of the family up to help clear out everything. I got one of those small dumpsters, and finally I brought it up to, I guess, to Dad, like, hey, I want to get a dumpster and try to get everyone up. And like, because they were also saying, like, well, our dad saves everything. So it's more like, well, I had this for this person and this for that. I was like, look, everyone can come up if they want it. They take it. Everything else is going into a dumpster because it's been years. And there's just, you know, junk that Dad has collected over the years and didn't take with him. Because they have even less room up where they are now.
Right.
So... And everything was overgrown, and like it's a good chunk of land that we got back from just chopping it all down, all the stuff around the sheds. And that was the main thing. You know, Dad would just put everything around those sheds.
Right, yeah.
So there's old lawn sweepers and mowers, and there were 5 bikes back there, and piles and piles of lumber, which I still need to burn. Yeah, just old, you know, and most of it was way too far gone, you know, because he didn't cover up most of it, so it just kind of...
Yeah.
Was half dirt, water, and a little bit of wood left, you know? Like but yeah, it was good because, I don't know, we had like 8 or 9 people. We just all just went to... That's the best thing for that type of deal, right? Like we all say, you get a lot of people up and you're working hard on one thing. You're like, oh man, this... But then you turn the corner and something else has been like fixed or cleaned up. You know, you're like, oh, you moved. Oh, thank you. You know, it's like it rejuvenates you a little bit. Like, oh, they're all like, everyone kind of focuses on one thing. Mm-hmm. I was kind of, you know, trying to tell everyone, hey, let's get this and that and see what we can do with this. And then focusing on a few things and just lugging crap into the dumpster.
Yeah. When you get a bunch of people who are all just willing to like work and they're not going to just stand around and do nothing until someone tells them to do, then like that's the one great thing I've like, you know, we've said this other times, but about our like our brothers, you know, it's like when we all get together to do a job, like no one's ever just standing around not doing anything. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like if you don't have a job that second, then you're like look for something else to do. Because the whole point is that we all want to get it done as quick as possible so we can just drink beers and hang out. You know, like so like let's just keep going, you know, like we want to get it done and
yeah,
like,
what else? Efficiency, what do you need? Right? Let's move this. Can I get this? Hey, can I get a hand with this? Like
yeah, right, exactly. All right, what's the next thing? Like what do we want to do with this? You know, like somebody tell me what I can do and I'll just do it until it's done and then we'll move on to the next thing, you know. Yeah.
So no, it was good, and we got so. I mean, we filled out that dumpster so quick, with all types of stuff and
nice. Where was that from? That dumpster was like just a normal place.
It was, you know, one of Dad's old friends from Glen Arm.
Oh, nice.
He has a trucking company, or he has a truck, and he has a few dumpsters that he...
And drops them off. And,
yeah. So he dropped it off, and actually, he was real cool with, like... It didn't have to be, like, tomorrow. You know, I'm not going to... And I asked him, I say, hey, well, like, what about... I know some people don't want anything over the top of the rent, like the edge, you know, like, yeah, on top of that. And, eh, a little bit's fine. I'm not worried. But, you know, he's, you know...
Yeah, right. He was yeah, as long as things aren't, like, flying out, you know, when they're traveling the price and was, whatnot.
Yeah, and the price was fine. And, nice. And it was, yeah. You know, we filled it to the brim and packed that bad boy. And it was... it couldn't have been light, so...
Nice.
You know, it would have taken too many trips and some of that stuff yeah, they wouldn't have let trucks. Us just throw in the county dump, you know.
Right. Yeah.
So
yeah, it's always an issue.
We got a lot back. It really opened up. Really made it look much nicer and cleaner too than just having junk all around, you know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, cuz it's probably like half of that back space between the like, you know, the temperature controlled shed and your coop, you know, like
yeah.
Half of that space was just like taken up with storage or that stuff, you know, right. Overgrown land and stuff. And so, yeah, that's awesome. Open up that whole thing.
Yeah. Father-in-law brought his a bunch of mower. A push mower and a lot of it's just his heavy gas powered tools.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Which I appreciated. And then also the farm, the field next to us, a couple trees went down. And mm-hmm. They just pushed everything up to the edge.
Oh, jeez.
So it became like three giant trees just in the way of between, you know, the backyard and the field.
Right, yeah.
Which had a little walkway, and they can push whatever they want up to the edge of their property, but it ends up just becoming a wall of shit at the edge of mine, too.
Right, exactly.
So we cut all that down and made a path again. And,
nice. Yeah, that's good. I know, yeah, because that's like something, you know, that like passageway through from the side of the yard into the field is like an active passageway.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, like I know that we have like, you know, probably hundreds of times have gone through there to walk out to the field and look out whenever, like, you know, check out fireworks from a distance or whatever, like fly the drone and, you know, it's just a cool space out there. So
I walk out with the children and the chickens.
Yeah, right.
I just go sit out there. We flew a kite out there a few times.
Nice, yep. We've shot video out there a couple times. Have done outros for videos out there. You know,
it's a good spot.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was good.
Nice. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, it's been that, like, you know, that spring cleaning vibe is definitely in the air.
Right.
We've been, like, planting things and cleaning different bits of the yard and, you know, making new plans and working on stuff outside. So, you know, it's like the daylight hours, like, double because you go from like, getting dark at 5 to now it's, like, dark at 9, you know, so.
It's been so nice, man. And now it's the first summer where Grant can go out and play, you know, with us out there and with Maeve.
Right.
But so now he's, you know, 2 coming on 3, so it's like we can send them both out to play.
Yeah.
And they just play. It's great. Like it's
yeah.
It's been really nice cuz I can either, you know, awesome. I'll play with them for a bit and get some stuff done and do this and then I'll just kind of sit and they just
yeah,
run around. It's awesome. And I made a couple trails in the wood next to the house.
Oh, nice.
So there's a few different paths away. They'll, like, go in and come out the other way and, like, follow the chickens around. And, like, I'm just trying to make it, like, a kind of a fun spot for them.
Yeah, that's great. Speaking of that area of your property, I know we're talking about redoing the horseshoe pits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, like, that's one of those things. It's funny, like, growing up, we always had horseshoe pits. Like, I guess it was, like, my dad's always loved horseshoes, you know? Mm-hmm. So, like, there was always, like, you know, horseshoe setups. And so, but at, like, you know, your place, which was Mom and Dad's, like, they put the pins up, you know, whatever, the spikes, but never actually built, like, a pit for it, you know?
Right.
Which is fine. But,
which, you know, sharpens your skill as a player.
Yeah,
You don't count on backboard. That,
yeah,
or right, even sideboards. There is no luck. Well, there is, obviously, but there's...
Yeah.
If you pass the pin, you're going flying into the woods.
Right, yeah.
So you either dial it in, or you can try to drop it right in front of it or go right for it. You're always aiming right at it, not just at a 4 foot square.
Right, exactly. Just trying to hit the sand so it bounces back and
it's fun. It's a real quick job.
Yeah, right, exactly.
It's just stacking and drilling through them and then putting some stakes down through them. You know, it's like really, mm-hmm. really simple.
Yeah. Are you planning on doing like 4x4s stacked up or
whatever like the cheapest that I can something? Get?
Okay. Yeah.
So whether it's kind of rounded, rough kind of fence stuff or a 4x4, you know, or anything, whatever. I actually threw some away on Saturday, which was some of the stuff that was still good. I was like, I'm not going to use, and I was in throwaway mode. So I was like, anybody want it? They're like, that's good. I was like, well, take it with you then, or because I'm going to burn it or throw it away. You know, it's one of those things. But then right away, I was like, oh man, I've been thinking about doing these horseshoe pits.
Yeah, right. Of course. Yeah. But like, anyway. Oh, Dad's like, oh, see, gotcha.
But yes, I'll do some pits and put it right back in that spot. Nice. Where they are now, because that's the one spot that stays shady the longest.
Yeah.
But yeah, I want to do, hopefully, maybe next month we can do it if I can get, even if it's just like 8 of us.
Yeah.
We'll just hang out and do it.
Yeah.
Have a little horseshoe tournament, but I also want to add cornhole so we can, it can go faster. You know, we can have 2 games going at once, and also gives a chance to anyone who maybe isn't that good at horseshoes or don't know it that well.
Right, yeah.
So it gives all the teams a chance, and then,
you can have, like, a side-by-side, like, horseshoe and,
horseshoe
tournament and, cornhole tournament at the same
time. Yeah, I was kind of looking into how to do it. Like, it seems maybe a round-robin tournament's the best, where you play everybody, each team, in each thing, once. Mm-hmm. And then you add up the scores, and then you have either, a 4-person shootout or a 4-team shootout or a 2-team shootout for the best. So, you know, you get 1 point for winning against anybody.
Right.
And then we see who has the most points at the end. And goes, like all right, this guy has, you know, they won 6 games.
Yeah.
And the second place won 5 games. And those two teams will play each other in, I would say maybe ended in horseshoes, but we have to feel it out.
Yeah.
Or maybe you ended in both games. Like you do you do 2 again. Like, all right, we'll do 1 horseshoe and 1 of that. And if there's still a tie, we'll figure out some type of shootout on each one, you know?
Right. Yeah. No, that'd be cool. Yeah, I'm sure, I'm sure Sean would want to come play. Like, probably Charles would want to come play, you know, like.
Right, Charles definitely. And Guy and our brothers. And I think we'll get enough pretty quick.
Yeah, definitely. No, that sounds fun. I know you said we talked about that, and I just think that's, like, you know. It's just a fun event, you know, like, obviously we all love competition, you know, and that's, like, good competition where you're, like, everyone's hanging around and you, like, drinking beers and you're talking and...
Have a good time. We'll cook out, we'll start at some time around maybe lunchtime.
Yeah, right.
And we'll hang out until whenever. Yeah. Like, whatever, we'll cook dinner, you know, we'll cook, some cookout, some burgers and dogs maybe towards the end of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And we'll have a fire and, you know, people can go home whenever they want.
Yeah, sounds great. I love it. Yeah, just that. It's funny. I was talking to one of my students about having a fire and cookout and stuff, and they were like, "You do cookouts?" I was like, "Come on, man! Everybody does cookouts. Cookouts not a black thing." they're like, "Would you invite us to the cookout?" I was like, "No." I was like, "You were my students. I see you at school. I don't need to see you at my house." They're like, "Come on, Mr. Herrera."
Well, there's definitely there's definitely the thing of. It's usually, maybe he was asking you in the way that they think of it as, would you invite the white guy to the cookout?
Yeah, right.
That's always the question, right? Yeah, like, are you cool enough to come to the cookout?
Right. And that was the joke, too. Like, because, of course, I know what they mean by that.
Right,
you know?
Right,
and
right.
I'm like, no, heck no.
Yeah, I want you
students at my house. I was like, I see you enough at school. They're like, come on.
Telling everything I do.
Yeah, right.
Mr. O'Hara had 8 beers in 2 hours. Yeah, exactly. Leave it alone. Didn't see nothing.
See outside of school.
He puts limes in Natty Bows.
That's crazy.
But yeah, it's so yeah, it'd be fun.
Yeah,
I'll try to get Doesn't seem like Dad can go. He'll be camping. And six. Oh, the six okay. seems to be the best.
Right. For everyone. Yeah.
So I don't know. That might be what it'll be.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. And, you know, if you do want to shoot, like, if you want to shoot some video of making those backers, like, you know, we could do a video. Mm-hmm. You know, refurbishing the horseshoe pit.
I know, but then it ends up you building it, me shooting it. Maybe. Which I guess is fine.
Either that or, like, we could, like, you know, we could both do it. You know, if you want the help, like, we could start it. Like, I could start it, and then, like, you do it. We like, set a tripod or whatnot and do mm-hmm. it that way, you know. Or you just do it and then make some content for your own Instagram. Or for our channel. I mean, it's still the Art of Craftsmanship, you know. Like, make a short of you doing it. Put it up.
Cool. Yeah. I don't know if you saw, but Dennis T. from the O's, the guy I work with, he's, like, the game presenter now at the Orioles.
Okay.
I gave him some eggs, and he did nice. Like a whole post on it. I'll have to share with you. It's great.
Oh.
Did you see that?
Was that like the O'Hara?
O'Hara Coops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is that your stamp?
Yeah.
Yep. You guys got a stamp that's O'Hara Coops? Yeah. That's great. I did see that. I was like, whose black hand is this? I was like, what is it? Who's posting about this? I was like, is this like some other like person who has it? Like, I know I saw you post about it, but I wasn't sure like who it was. You know, I didn't know the connection. That's funny.
No, O'Hara Coops is us.
Nice.
Or it's just, we were thinking about it. We're like, well, we get some eggs, we'll give them out.
Yeah.
And then Caitlin and I were like, oh, let's get like a cool stamp. We'll put like something farm on it or something, you know, just type of thing.
Yeah.
So she just printed up one, or she just got one. Nice. It's an O'Hara Coop. So now sometimes when we give them out, we'll like stamp them.
That's fun.
Just for like fun. And Dennis, he's about to build. Well, at first he was like, I'm going to build my own coop from scratch, blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, right on. Like, I was telling him about how I was going to do that and then kind of gave up.
Yep.
And bought a kit. Still built the thing, but you know, he built, you know, with it, had all the together. Pieces and hardware and everything. Yeah.
Right.
And sure enough, like a week later, he's like, yeah, I'm just going to buy a kit. I was like, yeah, it's a kind of pain in the butt.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just been, we've been talking chickens like all year. Like, got this and got that. Oh, cool. What about this? I'm just telling him the minimal stuff I know from doing it for a year and a half. And I was like, well, I got a bunch of, like, you know, like, here, I'll bring you some. So I brought him in, and it's funny to walk in, like, through security with, like,
eggs.
A thing of eggs, a carton of eggs.
Yeah, right.
But he loved them, absolutely loved them. That was the post. He's like, man, they're the best eggs I've ever had, blah, blah, blah. And he's, like, super clean, like, super fit guy. Like, you know, like, really. So he doesn't mess around. Like, he just eats them straight up.
Nice.
Like, cooks them. I don't even know if he puts salt and pepper. Maybe a little bit of that. But other than that, he just eats them. He's like, I compared them. Best eggs I ever had. I was like, yeah, awesome. I was like, yes.
That's great.
I mean, you know, they're like, they are free range chickens. We'll let them out every day.
Yeah, right.
You know, so they are just kind of as normal as you can get with still, you know, give them some chicken feed, but they eat all types of stuff.
So have you, like, you still have all your chickens? Have you lost any to any predators or anything? Or
no, not to predators. We had 8. Now we have 6 left. Okay. One turned out to be a rooster, and then one just died from maybe shock. Like, chickens are pretty temperamental with how they can die. It just seems to be out of nowhere.
Yeah,
gotcha. Just something will happen when they're young that might freak them out, and then just they kind of
have a heart attack.
Yeah, they like freeze up, and then in a couple of days they're gone. It's a very strange thing.
It's crazy.
So that happened to one, or maybe it was sick, but we just kind of thought, maybe got freaked out by something, and then just didn't make it. And then I told you the story. I had to dispatch the rooster.
Yeah.
Pulled its head off.
The warrior rooster that was, like, fighting your children.
Yeah, he was terrorizing everyone. So.
May run around with a bat.
Uh-huh, fighting them off. So, he went. He's a good rooster. You know, he's doing his rooster thing. He's a really beautiful bird, too. But, he had to go. He's right at that level where he can leap at their faces, you know? That's the last thing I need them to scratch an eye out. And she was starting to get really freaked, like, scared.
Yeah,
so I was like, like, now it's not... what I want her to get out of it, she's not getting out of it.
Yeah.
She's too terrified to go down there and do the chores because this thing does attack her and it does scratch her. Like, it hurts. Like, she's been, you know, then you're like, all right, that's enough.
Yeah. All right, you little punk. Now you get dead.
Come here.
Try to scratch me.
When I finally grabbed him,
yeah,
he just, like, went still.
Dang, he knew
it. Totally. Oh, that's shit. That's it.
Yeah, that's it.
Damn, I pushed it too far.
the giant got me.
Yeah, what are you doing with that rake?
No fighting back. What are you doing with that rake? Pow. Well, you're done.
Yeah, it felt a little bad, but also it had to be done.
Did you skin it and eat it?
No, we got rid of it. We thought about it, but we just weren't prepared at the time.
Right.
We didn't have enough research. Like, we've never done it. So that would take a few more weeks of YouTube videos. It kind of just came to it where it just became too much, like, right away.
Yeah. Right.
Like, it was kind of like, all right, it's got to go, like, now. Like, we're in the next couple of days, and that's what happened. So.
Yeah. Would you do take it out and put it out in the field or something, or?
I actually threw it away in the trash.
Yeah,
I mean, I know you're not supposed
to. It's going to biodegrade, you know, same difference.
So. It is what it is. There's all types of crazy stuff in the trash. Yeah.
I think that's a pretty, like, but, like, you know, eating an animal is a fairly simple, like, or skinning and eating is fairly simple, especially with chickens, because you're, like, you just pull the feathers off, right? And then you're, like, to the skin.
Yeah.
But you just kind of open up the body and clear out all the guts. That's it.
It's kind of one of those, but there's also some of the things where if you don't, you know, clear out the wrong ones the wrong time, you spoil the meat. It takes a little bit more.
Yeah, I guess so.
And we have never done it. Never. So it was, you know, we kind of just went,
Yeah, and I've like, you know, I've filleted a decent amount of fish and stuff over the years. So I, you know, it's like, it's not super different. Like, you know, you have like the organs, cavity, and then the rest of it's the meat around it. Right. So it's like not too dissimilar, but yeah, I mean, if you don't understand what you're doing, then the chance of puncturing the guts or something and getting like all that crap all over everything.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, next time we're definitely for that, and I think that's the best thing to do for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the future we would want to do that because, Caitlin's going like full hippie on me.
Nice.
She's replaced all our things in plastic with glass and all types of that. Like, oh my gosh,
it's great,
but it's fun. Like, I like all that stuff, so I'm like, cool. Right. All
right. Yeah, you have somebody else who's like also into it. Like, cool. All right. Yeah,
I'm on board. You know, a little homesteady stuff. Like, that's cool. We, you know, we got a nice big garden and chickens and.
Yeah.
But then they'll be like, I want goats and stuff. I'm like, no, we're not getting too big. Chicken is really a nice, easy livestock to.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Relatively self-sufficient. You know, you can leave for a weekend and not worry about it. You know, put some extra, you know, water in and stuff. And
yeah, and they come back every night. You know,
yeah,
they come in and they put themselves to bed. All you gotta do is close the door. they want to be in the coop.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's
that. They want to go nest up and snuggle down in there, and so it's you just leave the door open and they come back.
When do you go out to like close it down at night?
Actually, right now it's still open, so I gotta go close it down. Okay. So usually, it's like dark. Once it gets dark, they go in.
Yeah,
so you can. Have
you ever had any wayward ones you had to find after dark?
No.
You're like, oh, chicken.
No, they all come back.
That's crazy. It's cool.
Yeah.
That's that innate, you know, like built in.
They just want to be together and they want to the nest up. They want to like get in their little spots and chill.
Nice. Right on. Cool. Well, I will... just to change the subject, I talked about taking Nicole to the airport to drop her off to go to Montreal. But Corinne and I are going to visit her in Montreal this Thursday. So we're going Thursday through Sunday. So we'll be up there. So
that's sweet.
It'll be my second time in Canada. The first time was when we went to Ottawa for our cousin's wedding. But you know, we didn't do anything. Like, we stayed at that. There was, like, the house we all stayed in, which was fine. And it was, like, you know, but Ottawa, there is, like, that kind of old quarter, which is a little bit more French. And then there's, like, the newer half or whatever. It's, like, what is it? Ottawa's on one side, and I forget what the other side of the city is. But there's, like, the French side and then the you know, English side. But Montreal is like French, you know, it's like, that's a French city, like straight up. So I'm excited. It'll be really good. We've got like tons of good recommendations for fun things to do. Like there's also all sorts of cool markets and museums and, you know, like galleries and things like that. So we have some fun stuff. It's funny though, cause so Nicole was there for, a conference for a group called Arliss, which is Art Librarians of like North America or something. I forget what it is, but like it's like very specific. It's like just specifically art libraries, you know. So it's this art library conference. She's there because she's doing a lightning talk, where like they kind of open it up to like people want to do lightning talks, which are like somewhere between the like, you know, anywhere between like 10 and 15 minutes, I guess. So like pretty quick talks, but she's doing a lightning talk there. So she's there this week. She went up on Saturday and then she'll be there. She's like Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday is the conference. And then so Nicole, Corinne, and I are flying up on Thursday and then we'll stay through Mother's Day, which is Sunday. So
that's fun. Yeah. You already got the room, huh?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm excited to like go up and check it out. And like, you know, I've been to, Italy and, you know, we kind of like, other than that, Nicole and I went to Spain for a week as well. And there's like something really like interesting and very different culturally when you go to another city that does not speak English as its first language. And so like, I'm excited about that. Now, obviously this is Montreal in Canada. And so everyone's going to be able to speak, everyone's speaking English and French, but French is the first language in the city, right? Mm-hmm. So all the signs will be in French. Everything's going to be in French, but everyone will be talking French, but everyone will know English as well. Mm-hmm. Mostly, you know, of course you might have like some old people or something or whatever who don't know, but no, it's exciting. It's like such a different, it's such a culture change when you don't understand the language, you know, then you're like, it's very much a like more visual observing things, you know, than just reading, right? Because it's not about like, you can't read everything, you can't understand what everyone's saying, so it's a very visual experience. You're like, how do I get down here? Well, I have to go to this gray building and then I have to turn and I go to the blue building because it's, like it's a, you understand it's visually.
Right, it's a great dive into it. Really makes you take everything in more.
Yeah,
like you said, you're really going, hey, we're looking for this street and a building that looks like this, and maybe I can't read the text, so we're looking for pastries. Like, where are the pastries on this block? So you're looking in every window.
Yep.
Right, then you make your way in and you're trying to like, and like you said, they'll speak English because they know, everything's in English and French.
Yeah,
at least but that's how I felt when I went to France and Italy. It was kind of like you just went and you are forced to go all in.
Yeah.
Like, right, and to interact. Like, well, we just got to do it. You're a little nervous.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to be a jerk. You don't know how they'll take it, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, but you're like, you give it a go, which is the great thing, which you don't have to in a lot of places. You just take everything for whatever. It'll be fine. I'm used to it. But it's kind of, I want to go this place, and I don't know. They don't know the same things I know, but I just got to dive into it. That's a great way to experience another place.
Yeah, absolutely. That, like, total immersion, That was one of the great things that when I was in grad school and I went to Italy for the summer between my two grad years, and we went and we stayed in a small town, and like no one actually spoke English. Mm. Not many people. There were a few, like a handful of people who spoke English, but because it was like a small town, in Italy and not one of the big cities, you know, like Rome, Florence, you know, Naples, all those like places, Venice, everyone speaks English because they're like, it's such a tourist attraction. You know, all the conversations are in Italian, but if you actually have to speak to someone in English, they'll know enough English to talk to you.
Right.
But in like Ascoli, the little town, like nobody spoke English. You know, so it was like, you had to do it, which was really cool. So, you know, and then you also wanted to try, you know, it's like, I want to try to like,
yeah.
like converse a little bit and learn enough of the language to like, you know, ask some questions.
Come si dice, pasta, a wine, per favore, yeah?
Right, exactly. You know, and then they're okay, you know, they're like,
gelato?
Gelato? Oh, you speak Italian? I'm like, no. And they're like, okay. And they keep speaking to you in Italian.
No.
Like,
pasta, wine? No? Gelato? Huh? That's it.
Just a
small you're set.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. but yeah, no, so I'm super excited. It'll be really fun. And Corinne, she did go to Canada with us when we all went up for our cousin's wedding.
Yeah, but she was young.
But she was young, so she doesn't really remember. So this is the first time she'll be going on like an international trip. And also, like, it's been a while. She's flown as well, you know? Yeah. So she's like, we're flying and we're going out of the country. This is great. And it's like, you know, we're going out of the country and we're going to a French city, you know? Like, it's exciting. So
it's exciting.
Really, really good. But it is funny, though, because Corinne and my tickets are out of Dulles. And so we have a flight back into Dulles. And we actually have, like, so we're all flying back on Sunday, but we don't have the same flight. So, like, Corinne and I are flying, and then Nicole is flying separately. And we were like, okay, well, whatever. We fly a little earlier, and she's like 45 minutes later than we are, or something like that, or the other way around, I forget. But it was like, oh, whatever. You know, one of us will get back to Dulles a little early. They'll hang out there, get their gear, and then the other people will show up and then we'll all drive together. But turns out that her flight is back to Reagan, not Dulles. So now Corinne and I are flying back to Dulles. So I did have Nicole. I was asked her to like check to see if she could switch her flight back into Dulles rather than into Reagan. Mm. You know, like if it's, I was saying if it's like, I don't know, like 60, 70 bucks or less, you know, like go ahead and do it. It's just the convenience of us being there together and not having to like add that extra time, because we're all getting back in the evening on Sunday anyway, so we're gonna like, by the time we get home, it's gonna be like 10:30 or 11, and we're all going to bed and going to work, then, you know, school the next day. So
I mean, I guess you could also have our Uber to you.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, Reagan is not, it's not super far. It's probably like 25 minutes from Dulles, you know, so it's not like the end of the world. If she can't get it switched, it would just be a little bit more convenient if she could get it switched over. Sure. So she said she would look into it. So she's like, yeah, it makes sense. So.
Nice. Cool. Well, but yeah, exciting stuff. Now makes me want to travel, but I got the beach and camping trips coming up. Yeah. I've been very jealous of Drew. Drew was talking to me. He's like, yeah, we already got two more trips planned. Steph's, every time we get back, Steph's planning another camping trip.
Like, oh, that's great. Awesome.
That's great.
He's got the camper. She's loving it.
So I'm hoping Caitlin gets jealous when we see it for our camping trip. And
yeah.
She wants to get one.
That'd be fun. Yeah, Nicole, we've talked about it as well. She's like, that'd be so nice, you know, like, because we used Mom and Dad's pop-up a couple times, and it is really nice to have your own little space.
Right.
You know? It's like all it's settled and ready to go and fancy. But
I mean, there's definitely, it's tense classic, but yeah, I don't know. But anyway.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool. All righty. Well, what do you got? You got a recommendation?
Well, you know, since I talked about Dennis, I'll do it's Dennis T. It's Dennis T. ITS DENNIST. He is the host for the Orioles.
Okay.
So every game, he, you know, like, hey, welcome to the Camden Yards, blah, blah, blah. He does all the interviews. He does stuff all game, all types of stuff. He's a really, really great guy.
Is he the one that, like, does stuff, like, out, like, with the crowds and stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Like, hey, we're doing this competition. All right, you got to look up there and guess all. He's, like, the host.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right,
man, he's great, man. He's so good at what he does. He's so natural. He's so friendly. A lot of non-talented people, they'll ask questions, and then they answer them, and they just move on, you know? What do you think about this? Blah, blah, blah. Okay, and then they just ask the next one. But he actually interacts with people. He does something I love, which, again, some people don't do, is after he's done talking to people or kids or whatever, you know, like, has a segment with them.
Yeah.
He'll, like, say goodbye and, like, give him a high five and a shake and, like,
yeah,
cool, thank you so much. You know, he does that, which a lot of people surprisingly don't do.
Right.
Like, they will finish up a segment, and they're like, right back into business mode. Like, all right, let's go, let's move. No, he's like, oh, hey, man, thank you so much. If it's a kid, he'll give him, like, a high five and, like, all right, thanks, yeah, guys. Right. But anyway, that's really cool. Really, yeah, good at his job. He doesn't really post, yeah, much, like, but...
It sounds like that, you know, that type of person. He's like, he's that type of person. Yeah. Like, he's a, yeah, good person who, yes, likes being around people and talking to people.
Yes.
And that's why he does, that's why he's good at his job. Right. It's like natural.
Yeah. So cool. It's cool. He puts some stuff. He's also a personal trainer, so you can see absolutely how jacked he is, which I, yeah, never knew until I, like, looked on his thing. It's him, like, super ripped in the gym. But I think he's also, like, a personal trainer and does some other stuff. And,
right.
You know, but no, great guy. And he's, you know, really good at, and he's been doing some stuff with Ravens recently, which has been cool. I hope he deserves, you know, any place that will take him and, yeah, should pay him more money, because he's awesome at what he does.
Nice. Cool.
Yeah.
Dennis T. All right, my recommendation is a metal artist, and her Instagram, let's see, this, I don't know what her actual name is. Oh, Ellen Durkin. And she, her Instagram is Iron Maiden Forge. And she does some, like, awesome, like, fashion garmentry, but it's all, it's like a combination of some, like, some, like, fabric garment, but most of it, it's metal, right? So it might be, like, a whole, like, bustier and, like, you know, dress thing, but all made out of strap metal, you know, yeah, or, like, a collar, or, like, a, what's it called? A, the thing you strap around, is like, a corset, you know, yeah, like, but, yeah, everything is, like, it's all forged. It's all, like, metal strapping and welding and forging, and so it's very, like, this, all this, like, crazy metal stuff and shapes and things, and sometimes it's, like, organic in nature, like, it might look plant-like, but other times it's just, like, if you imagine a, like, medieval dungeon torture device, it kind of looks like that, you know, like, straps and flat bar and rivets and stuff, and but just some really cool stuff. And she's got a couple smoking hot models that always model her work too, which is good. but yeah, it's really cool stuff. And it's popped up a couple times on my Instagram over the last, like, year. And so I started following her, and she does, like, just awesome work, really cool work. And she'll, you know, she's a, I mean, I don't know if I'd call her a fashion designer, but she has, like, runway shows of the work, you know? Mm. So it's like, I don't know if that's, if it's more of like an, like a sculptural artist who is taking on the role of fashion because that's how you display wearable art, you right. know, like,
right.
But it's, yeah. it seems less, it's like high fashion, like high Vogue art fashion that right. is like more for art rather than for wearing, you know, it's not like Calvin Klein. It's like, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
yeah. But it's really cool stuff. She does really beautiful work, really awesome metal work and cool forms and all sorts of great shapes and stuff. But yeah, again, her Instagram is Iron Maiden Forge, Ellen Durkin, really cool stuff. And she's just super talented. So the more I look at her stuff and check, it's just really cool. And she'll do drawings of, like, you know, like a similar, like a fashion, like a, you know, fashion artist would do, or they would, like, do drawings of, like, their, all the lines and all the fashion garments and stuff, and then mod and then create them. So, like, sometimes she'll show her drawings of, like, the, you know, all the metal work and stuff, and then you'll get, like, the finished piece. So really cool. So
nice.
Iron Maiden Forge. Check it out.
There you go.
All right. Well, there you go. That's the end. Episode 238. We got 12 more episodes to hit 250. We'll have to do something fun for 250.
Something special.
What do we do for, I think was 200 the live thing? I think that's what we did for 200.
Maybe.
So. But yeah. So let's do something fun for episode 250. I have some more people that I have on the list for guests on the podcast. You can keep an eye out for that. We will not be doing a podcast this weekend because I will be up in Montreal with my wife and daughter for a nice long weekend heading into Mother's Day. Nice. But for all the mothers out there, happy Mother's Day. We really appreciate you. It is a special day for all these amazing women who, like, it's so...
You make humans?
Yeah, exactly. And just, like, the maternal, like, caringness of women is, like, what makes our world go round.
They're good people. You know.
Yeah. Corinne and I were having this conversation about like the study that was about like men and women and how men who are married are like 50% happier in life and women who are married are like the same. Like they're like even keel. Like they're unmarried women are equally happy as married women. Mm. And I was like, well, you know, like women are caring and loving and they have all these relationships with like other women and people and children that like fulfill that thing, and men are not that as much, right? We don't have that type of intimate relationship with that many people other than our wives, you know, other than our like partners,
right?
And like, yeah, we do have some, but it's like it's in women's nature to be caring and loving and build these like intimate relationships with people.
Yeah, women need less straightening out.
Right. Yeah, that too. Yeah.
Right.
It's like men are grumpy, you know, so of course, like they get with women and they're happier. Like women are naturally that way.
Right.
So they're
happy. Men need more like stability and guidance kind of.
Yeah.
More of a pathway.
Right. Exactly.
You know, yeah. Like women are kind of, yeah, more responsive to their environment and like more like, yeah, what's the word? They're just on top of it. Careful. Right? They get their shit together a little bit better than guys do. We kind of run amok if we're let loose.
Right.
So it's having men tied down a little bit helps.
Right.
Helps a guy. For women, like, it doesn't change much. They're not going to be much more crazy if they're not strapped down to a guy.
Right.
Guys will lose their minds and go and want to see everything and go and just disappear. And
Yeah. But yeah, so happy Mother's Day to all our, you know, listeners who are mothers, and to all of our male listeners, happy Mother's Day to your mothers. Yeah. Tell your mother happy Mother's Day that you love her, because mothers are special people.
There you go.
All right, everybody, thank you so much for hanging out with us. Make sure you head over to YouTube, check out what we have going on over there. Check out the videos and the shorts and all the stuff we're doing. You know, that's why we do the podcast. We want to send people over there and check out what we're doing on YouTube. Also, you can find us both on Instagram at The Art of Craftsmanship and at The Art of Camera Guy. You can check out O'Hara's Coops over on The Art of Camera Guy. See what Devin's egg stamp looks like.
I might do a whole separate chicken channel.
There you go. So a whole new thing. Man, I'm never going to any time over here for AMC. But yeah, and then you can, you know, if you want to see what's happening behind the scenes, I try to, you know, keep up with Instagram, putting like every, you know, kind of day-to-day stuff there as well. So you can check that out. And then if you guys want to support our channel and the podcast and what we do and try to, you know, give back to, you know, the things that we're putting out there for free in the world, you can go to patreon.com/theartofcraftsmanship and you can support us there as well. We appreciate everyone who does.
It would be fun before we go for 250. What if we had a bunch of people on who have already been on, but we just record 20-minute or 10-minute segments with each of them?
That could be cool. Yeah.
Just be like, hey, give us 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And we'll like, I don't want it to necessarily, like, don't, it's not 20 minutes about us. It's just like, let's have a discussion about something fun for 20 minutes.
Right.
And we'll put like 8 of them together. Oh, people like who we've had on before, you know.
Yeah, that sounds fun. Yeah, I like that. Some of our repeat guests.
Yeah, people have been on multiple times. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, that's a good idea. I like it. So there you go. You heard it here first, folks.
the 10 guest special.
Yeah, right. I know, man. We're going to be like planning this out. It's like, all right, what night of the week are you good? What night of the week are you good?
We'll have to do a few a night.
Right.
We're going to do 3 tonight. So we'll keep it tight. But like, hey, can you jump on for a half an hour?
Yeah.
And we'll record for 20 minutes.
We could, like, you know, we could have, you know, depending on who we have, you know, it's like start one conversation and then have the next person join like a half an hour later into the same thing. But, like, you know, a little overlap, be like, oh, okay, got to go. Daniel, we'll talk to you later. Dennis, good to hear from you. Good to see you here. Right. A little overlap recording. Very fun. Cool. I like it. All right, guys. Well, thanks so much for hanging out with us. Yeah, we'll, Devin, always a pleasure.
Yeah, brother.
Everybody else, thanks for listening. And we will talk to you guys all next time.